$29.98. Now that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all my pillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money back guarantee. Go to mypillow.com, click on the 2-pack special, use my promo code USA.
Many experts argue that if you want to develop a skill, let's say play an instrument or lead a team onto a field in football, basketball, or hockey, you need to rack up as many hours of deliberate practice as possible. But I had a chance to catch up with David Epstein. He's author of a new book titled Range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. And one of the things I asked him was, we talk about Tiger Woods and how Tiger Woods was playing golf at a very young age, but that he's the exception to the rule.
That's right. So the Roger Federer model is actually the norm, but nobody knows his story, right, where he played like a dozen different sports. Mother wouldn't allow him to specialize. So kid had to continue playing badminton, basketball, soccer, long after his peers specialized in tennis. And that turns out to be the norm, but it's not as dramatic of a story, so we don't really tell it. And the other thing about Tiger is early specialization may, in fact, work in golf. There's actually a surprising lack of good science in golf, but golf, the people who study it kind of consider it a pretty poor model of most other sports and most other things people want to do, because it's non-dynamic. People wait for each other to take turns. You're basically trying to do the same thing over and over with as little deviation as possible. And so while that may be good for golf, golf is not a good model from which to extrapolate to other types of learning.
Epstein's studies also found that if you take a year off from a particular sport and come back and play that sport, you won't necessarily be that far behind the people that have continued to play it and maybe didn't take that time off. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon and Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Beowulf Rockland.
We have with us today Streeter Seidel. He's a comedian and editor of collegehumor.com. He's the co-author of College Humor, the website, the book. Streeter, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, why should anyone but well-educated slackers buy this book?
Honestly, I don't know if anyone else should buy the book. That's kind of our target demo there. I guess dumb slackers would enjoy some of it as well. There's a lot of pictures in there, So if you're not...
Pictures are good for slackers of any education level, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you just, it's easier. but there is, I should warn anyone who's super, super lazy that there is quite a bit of text in there as well. So don't... You know, don't be disappointed if you were thinking it was going to be all pictures.
You're right. There are a number of different levels. You've got the basic pictogram sort of stuff, like the Drunkavision. You've got the historical allusions, and it's dense enough so that there are all different levels at which you can appreciate and consume it. And it seems to be one of those books to me. You go through it any number of times, and you catch something new each time. Is that what you were going for?
Yeah, when we have 10 years worth of articles on collegehumor.com, and when we were going through looking for, you know, what's the best maybe 200, 250 to pluck out and put in this book, we kind of wanted to give it, a wide variety. So we put in some stuff that's very prose-heavy, that's kind of very subtle, and then we put in things that were just loud and big and broad. So we kind of wanted to show the whole range of the site, because the site is, you know, a wide appeal site, and we try to hit as many people as we can. So, yeah, there, you know, we didn't want to make a book that was just one type of humor all the way through.
We're speaking with Streeter Seidel, the co-author of College Humor, the website, the book. How did you get into comedy to begin with?
I was a chubby sixth grader. I got, you know, all the baby fat came in, and I figured that if I learned how to make fun of myself very well, then other people wouldn't do it. So, you know, I could preempt their insults with my own. And I think that's how a lot of people get funny, is they do it out of necessity. And then I got on stage at some point, probably in high school, and just enjoyed it. And I was like, I think I could do this. If someone would just pay me to do this, this would be a fantastic job. And coming right out of college, I got a job at College Humor, and someone did pay me to do it. So
you are the envy of us all, sir. Just a quick biological side note. When did the baby fat go away for you? For me, I turned 18, and within 2 weeks, it was just gone. It was like a biological signal to say, okay, you're thin now. How did it happen for you?
I hit a growth spurt between 7th and 8th grade and came back. And I weighed the same. I probably weighed about 180, but I went from being 5'6" to 6'1". So it just kind of stretched out. You know, it stretched the weight out. And I was a skinnier guy all through high school. College, I returned to fatness, but that was man fat. I earned that fat. That didn't just happen.
Do you care to go into any of the particular modes through which that man fat was earned? I know what my favorite ones are, but
there was a lot of we'll just say a lot of liquid calories,
sure,
in college,
sure.
Empty calories that did not get burned off.
I think the dream of a lot of young people in your position is getting hired by someone like collegehumor.com. How did that happen to come about? Did you just luck into it? Did you just stumble into it? Did you work hard? How did that come about?
I guess it's kind of a mix of all of those things. I was cruising around the internet one night when I was a junior in college, and my friend sent me a link to this website, College Humor, which I had never heard of, and I read some of the articles on there, because at that time, no one was making original videos, so it was just articles. And I thought, oh, I could write stuff like this. And I sent in some articles, and they said, oh, why don't you be a columnist for us? And I just started cranking out articles. I would write like 3 a night. And I did that for a year and a half until I finished college. And it just so happened that when I was graduating, the 4 guys who started the company were moving it to New York, and they needed some writers because they had sold a book. And I just got hired because I was so prolific, I think. And myself and Amir Blumenfeld, who's still here, who's another writer, came on at right around that time. So in some ways, luck played into it. And in other ways, I was just, you know, feverishly writing comedy articles for the website all through college. So a little bit of both, I'd say.
We're speaking with Streeter Seidel, the co-author of College Humor, the website, the book. Who are your inspirations? Who did you grow up watching, listening, reading that inspired you in terms of comedy?
Oh, gosh. I think writing-wise, And this is going to be a weird answer, but my mom got me into Bill Bryson books when I was young, and I always found his prose to be so funny and so, you know, so subtly done that I think if he didn't get pegged as a travel writer, he would be considered a great comedy writer. Just the way he can kind of lull, you know, trick you into thinking something's funny, and his description is just... is hysterical. That's such a weird answer. You know,
it's an unusual comic DNA, I got to say.
Yeah, it's not like a Dave Barry or someone who's purposely trying to be very funny. I just found his stuff so funny. And, of course, you know, I grew up, of course, watching Saturday Night Live and you know, all the Comedy Central Presents, all those early comedians. But in terms of writing, I think if I were to try to imitate anybody, it would be Bill Bryson.
What do you think your favorite part of the book is? I mean, obviously, there's your stuff, so an innate bias towards that. What do you think the single best, you know, piece or couple of pieces is that collegehumor.com has produced over the years?
Oh, God, that's a tough question. Personally, I love there's a series of articles in here, one of which I co-wrote, but most of which I did not have anything to do with, called The Imagination of Wendell Blatt. And there are these sort of running, these little scenes that this fat, losery kid imagines playing out. And they're very complimentary to him. And they're really sad, but very, very funny. They're written by Jake Hurwitz.
Sort of Walter Mitty-esque.
Yeah, yeah. It's pathetic, I guess is the best word for Wendell. But also kind of saccharine, a little sweet. I also like, there's one... which is my dad's favorite article in the book, by a guy named Derek Walborn, called Building Your Huey Hog Model Chopper, which is like a step-by-step instruction for building a model helicopter. But very early on, he cuts himself with a razor blade, and then he's just cutting himself more and more and more with that little X-Acto knife and just bleeding out. And my dad saw that, and he was like a big model builder back in the 50s, and he was just cracking up. He was like, yeah, that's what happens. You just keep cutting yourself again and again and again.
If you had one comic dream, you know, one, you know, show you could do, one book you could write, you know, one set of comedians you could assemble along those lines, what would it be? What is your greatest comic dream professionally?
I guess it would be to go back in time and prevent Louis C.K. from ever being born, and then do his show, but as me instead. I think that would be the ultimate achievement.
Wow!
So
wow.
if you hear a way that I might be able to make that happen, please let me know.
Well, my flux capacitor is currently broken, but if I'm able to get it up and running again, you'll be the first person I call.
Oh, thank you so much.
Streeter Seidel is a comedian and editor of collegehumor.com. He's the co-author of College Humor, the website, the book. Streeter, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Beowulf Rockland on Now It's the News.
On Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get
get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then we suggest you call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 immediately. That's 1-800-658-8202. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we will give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 1-800-658-8202 now for your free author submission kit. Numerically, that's 1-800-658-8202. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 1-800-658-8202. That's 1-800-658-8202. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with a simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 for your free author submission kit.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Beowulf Rocklin.
With us today we have Jack O'Brien. He is the editor-in-chief of Cracked.com and one of the authors of the D-Text book, the stuff you didn't know about, the stuff you thought you knew. Jack O'Brien, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So there are a lot of them out there, and I've read parody textbooks before, but I have to say this is the first one I think could actually be used as a real textbook. It's enormously informative, while still being hilarious, do you guys secretly want to make people smarter while also making them laugh?
I think that we inherently pepper everything we write with jokes. That's just we're a team of comedy writers. But this is kind of what we found most interesting as we were developing our voice, is these really fascinating true facts and misconceptions about the world around us. And this book is sort of a systematic debunking of a lot of the mistruths that our team had kind of grown up learning and actually believing.
And there are an awful lot of them in there that I had pretty much taken for granted. For example, Paul Revere. I didn't realize that he played a much smaller role in alerting people to the arrival of the British in advance of the battles of Lexington and Concord than he actually did. Was there a moment that you kind of found yourself questioning everything that you had ever been taught?
Well, the Revere story is great because it's such a minor reason that he was included. So the true story is that there were 40 Midnight Riders. It wasn't Paul Revere riding by his lonesome against the dark wilderness with the British closing in. There was a well-established plan, right, ahead of time. 40 different messengers were ready, and when they saw the British were coming, they rode out. And they weren't screaming, "The British are coming," because 20% of the population were still loyalists. They were just kind of passing the message quietly. Revere was one of a handful of the 40 that got caught. So he was one of the worst of the messengers on that night. But he's the name that got used in the poem because his last name rhymes with a lot of different things, whereas the guy who actually was the hero of the evening had sort of a funny last name that was harder to rhyme with.
And so he entered into the popular culture that way. And there are all sorts of examples of that throughout the book, whether you're talking about history or science. You talk about something that I hadn't been aware of also, and this is why I say this would actually make a good textbook. I mean, you guys are sarcastic, you're funny, it's hilarious, but I had no idea that Einstein was something of a horn dog.
Oh, man. Boy, was he ever. He had many different relations concurrently with one another would be the dignified way of saying it. But yeah, the letters that he wrote to his mistresses and also his wife, just totally owning it that he was going to sleep with. There's one great quote that I'm going to get wrong because I don't have that section right in front of me where he says, "I'm sorry, darling, but I'm a man and she was willing," or something to that effect. That was his apology, and he had many relationships and told his wives up front, or wife up front.
And just to be clear, he didn't have, like, more than one at the same time, although it sounds like something that perhaps he would have been inclined to do.
Yeah, right. He was not a polygamist, but he, you know, just let it be known that you should not expect any sort of faithfulness from me. You know, he was a rock star. We remember him. College students have posters of his face on their wall in their college dorms, right alongside rock stars, because he was a science rock star, and he took advantage of that, I guess.
And I know, and now every time I see one of those posters of him with the wild hair, I'm not going to be able to not think of the opening notes of Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On."
Yeah. Well, how do you get that messed up hair?
We're speaking with Jack O'Brien, the editor-in-chief of Crack.com, and one of the authors of the D textbook, the stuff you didn't know about the stuff you thought you knew. Now, not everyone is the editor-in-chief of one of the biggest humor juntas in the world. How did you get cracked?
How did I get cracked? I relaunched the brand online. It used to be a Mad magazine until 2001. It went under at that time. And then we just decided to relaunch the brand and kind of grow it up with those of us who grew up reading it, and make it sort of more of a thinking man's humor site, thinking man's source of poop jokes and that sort of thing. The book is full of both of those things, really interesting information that we felt like not only the idea that Napoleon is short, the tongue map, I always thought that my taste buds were supposed to be relegated to neatly little cordoned off taste zones. All these things that are not true and that also cover up much more interesting truths.
One final question. Do you guys ever get in rumbles with the writers at Mad or The Onion?
not with Mad. We're actually big fans of The Onion. The Onion is, they're great joke writers, and fortunately we don't cover the same thing. You know, they write satirical headlines, and we do sort of this sort of thing where we're actually, you might read in a textbook, but with the voice that an Onion writer might bring to it, and also truth that you actually learned in textbooks.
I think there's room for both, and I gotta say, while I love The Onion, I probably learned more from your guys' textbook than I did from theirs. So you've done a fantastic job. Again, the book is The D-Textbook, The Stuff You Didn't Know About the Stuff You Thought You Knew. It's from Cracked.com, and we've been speaking with its editor-in-chief, Jack O'Brien. Jack, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you being on with us at Now It's the News.
Thanks so much for having me. It makes a great gift.
You're listening to Beowulf Rocklin on Now It's the News.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Vice President Mike Pence weighing in on the U.S.-China trade war, which is rattling markets and investors. The vice president telling Fox Business President Trump will continue to stand firm until China embraces and resets the trade relationship.
He believes for far too long we've tolerated trading relationships that are much more of a one-way street for the United States. We see nations that have broad access to our marketplace and give us limited access to their marketplace, and those days are really over.
President Trump's job approval rating is the highest it's been in 2 years, boosted by voter optimism about the economy. That's according to the latest Harvard Caps Harris Poll survey. The survey found that 48% approve of the job the president is doing, compared with 52% who say they disapprove. That's up from 45% in March. Friday, the President and First Lady will attend a reception to honor Gold Star families. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I have with me today Simon Winchester. He's the author of many acclaimed books, a couple of which I've read myself. The Professor and the Madman, Krakatoa, A Crack in the Edge of the World, and his new Byliner original e-short is called The Man with the Electrified Brain, Adventures in Madness. You can check that out. It's available as a Kindle single at Amazon, a quick read at Apple's iBookstore, and a Nook Snap at BarnesandNoble.com. The story is free to Byliner subscribers at Byliner.com. Simon Winchester, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, I don't want to be a spoiler of any kind. I don't think this is a reveal as it's kind of the essence of the book, but in fact, you are the man with the electrified brain. Isn't that the case?
That is indeed the case. I was really quite ill for about 4 years, from when I was 19 until I was 23, and this is back in the mid-1960s. And the reason for the title is that after 4 years of total exasperation by the doctors who were treating me for this mysterious debilitation, finally decided to give me electric shock therapy. And I had 6 sessions of it in 1969, and it worked impeccably. And the debilitation stopped immediately, and I've never had a twinge of it since.
Well, obviously, there's quite a bit to get into there, but describe, if you could, what happened when you were 19. What you were in your second year of college as a geology student? What was it that occurred precisely?
Well, it was really bizarre, and although I remember it, it's still rather difficult to describe it. It was June 1965, and I was coming to the end of the term, as we call it, the semester, you call it, at Oxford, and I had written on this particular night a very, very long essay, and I had finished it at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then went and, you know, brushed my teeth and do all the things to prepare for bed, and then got into bed with a copy of a newly bought copy of Human Bondage, the novel by Somerset Maugham, and read it up to page 32, and that's a sort of significant number in the story. I put a bookmark in it and put it down on the floor, turned over and went to sleep. And when I woke up the following morning, or later that same morning, everything in the world had changed and had become puzzling, inexplicable, sinister. I mean, just simple things like I had a crude print on my wall of my little study bedroom of a Van Gogh painting, The Bridge at Arles. And everything about it, I mean, it's a charming picture of a little wooden bridge and a couple of cypress trees and some brick walls and things. Everything about it seemed odd and frightening. The trees didn't look like trees. They looked like swirls of smoke. The bridge looked as if it was about to fall down. The brickwork looked too good to be true. I know this sounds rather silly, but I looked at this picture and it just didn't make any sense. And then I turned over and looked at the book on the floor, and I saw these words, Somerset Maugham and Of Human Bondage, and I fixated on things like the AGE suffix for the word bondage and thought, what on earth does that mean? It doesn't make any sense. And then I went upstairs and there was no one in the house. And then I thought, oh, my God, I feel dreadful, and went back to lie on my bed for 10 minutes and got up again after 10 minutes and went back upstairs. Still no one there, but the clock in the hall said 4 o'clock. And I thought, the clock is wrong, too. And went back down to the bedroom and found that, no, it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and that 10 minutes had actually been 8 more hours of sleep. And I knew I had... We were preparing for an expedition. I was a geologist and going off to the high Arctic, to Greenland. And I knew I had begged at the back of my mind I'd got to go and pick something up in a van which had been left parked for me at a certain street. And I managed to get there, dressed, I think, like a bagman. I mean, I can't imagine I put on any clothes with any thought of order or you know, elegance. And I went to the car, and I didn't know how to drive it, and had lost all my memory of. Finally did take off, crashed the car into a bollard, and just left it in the street there, steaming and leaking oil, and walked back and flung myself back into bed, and with the picture looking even more bizarre than it had. And slept, it turns out, for 3 days. That was on a Friday. I didn't wake up till Tuesday. And then things started to look a little more sane. And slowly this sort of fog of unreality that I was experiencing began to edge away. And after about a week, I was okay. And I thought, well, that was dreadful. It was mysterious. It was frightening. But that's all. And then I did go away to Greenland and went on the expedition. And another episode happened when I was way up in a very dangerous part of Greenland, up on the Greenland ice cap, and then these events started happening with some regularity, and that became frightening. And every morning I would wake up thinking, has this mysterious ailment come back? And most mornings it hadn't, but about once every 3 weeks it did, and then I was gripped by it for 9 days and feeling absolutely dreadful as a result. So it was a very, very mysterious and, as I say, debilitating malady.
We're speaking with Simon Winchester, the author of The Man with the Electrified Brain. During the first 9 days in which you experienced this, did you seek any medical attention at that point?
I didn't. I know this sounds rather odd to say so, but I think I was too frightened and too sort of catatonic by this event. And also, I'm British, as you might be able to tell, and I'm an American now, but I was brought up in Britain, and in those days you didn't trouble the doctor. Basically, unless you broke your leg, you know, fighting the Germans or something, you didn't go to the doctor. And as for mental illness, I mean, my father was a very stern man, and he would say if you ever got depressed or in any way affected mentally, you just go out and, you know, dig the garden for half an hour, and you're bound to feel a lot better. And so, no, I was mystified by what was happening, frightened by what was happening, but didn't for an instant think of going to the doctor. It was only about a year later, by which time I had become married and incidentally had one of these strange catatonic spells during the marriage ceremony and the days thereafter, that my wife said, look, you've got to go to the doctor. And all the doctor said was, you're depressed. And I mean, I could have told him I was depressed. I was really miserable by what was happening. And he prescribed an antidepressant, which did no good at all. And so I was caught in this peculiar situation of doctors just writing me off as just someone who was depressed, and that was it. Me knowing I wasn't, but unable to explain what I had. And so the years went on, and it was a very distressing and depressing situation.
You mentioned that you went to the Arctic shortly after this all began. Did you mention to anyone that these had begun to occur? And how did you manage to get through? Because it obviously has the potential for putting yourself in rather a precarious situation, so far from help.
Well, you're absolutely right. And indeed, one of these situations did occur when I was high up on a glacier on the ice cap, and I was gripped by this. All we were doing was sledding, pulling sleds. I didn't have to talk to anyone, so I was just mutely doing my duty. But we spotted on one particular day a cluster of crevasses, and so I skied, we were on skis, over to them, And I remember vividly looking over the edge at these very smoothly sculpted sort of chamfers of blue ice. And if you went over the edge, you'd be dead, I mean, because you'd fall hundreds and hundreds of feet into a chasm at the bottom of which was just rushing meltwater from the glacier. And I just didn't care. It wasn't that I felt suicidal. I just did not care if I fell over. And there was this terrible moment when the leader of the expedition suddenly said, "What the hell are you doing?" And I felt his skis coming alongside me, and he pulled me back from the brink, and he said, "What is wrong with you?" And I didn't give an answer. I just mutely went back and hooked up to my sled again and continued pulling it. They knew something peculiar was going on, but I've seen members of the expedition over the years, and they said all they remembered is that I was very quiet for a week or so and just wouldn't talk to anybody, and they never figured out why.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment with Simon Winchester. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes, plus smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair, and we're speaking with Simon Winchester about his book, The Man with the Electrified Brain, and his personal experience of mental illness.
Did the doctors, at least at that time, of the illness itself, did they come up with any sort of reasonable diagnosis as to what this was or what was bringing it on at that time? Did any of the doctors that you saw, once your wife finally convinced you that that was what you needed to do, come up with anything that made sense in terms of what was going on with you?
They didn't until one seminal moment after these attacks had been going on for 4 years. When I went with my wife and now my new child, who was about a year and a bit old, we went to see an elderly aunt of mine in, who lived in a city called Carlisle, which was about 100 miles from where I was a newspaper reporter. And she used to be visited. I mean, she had a wonderful collection of imagined illnesses herself. And so a doctor was a constant presence in her house. He was an elderly man, rather formal. And he saw me sitting sort of glassy-eyed, staring out of the window and looking obviously very distressed because I was in the middle of one of these instances. And he asked me some questions, and then he asked my wife some questions, and then he came over to me. And I always remember the moment he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "I know what's wrong with you, and I know how we can fix you. Don't worry, you're going to be fine." And half an hour later, an ambulance arrived, and I was taken off with three or four burly men to make sure that I couldn't object. And I was taken, if I say forcibly, I wasn't going to resist forcibly, but it turns out I was, as the British law says, sectioned. I was committed to this asylum under a section of the Mental Health Act. And taken to, and I remember passing through the gates, and it was called Garland's Hospital. And I remembered as I went that reporters from my own newspaper had written stories about the Garland's Hospital as being a place where patients had been abused by the male nurses. And I was thinking, not only do I feel dreadful and am gripped by this mysterious ailment, but I'm now being taken forcibly to a hospital where dreadful things happen. So what happened there very briefly is that I was strapped to a table, leather straps, brass buckles, legs and arms held down, and the doctor came and explained to me that they were going to give an electric shock to me, and they gave me an injection and put these electrodes on my head. And I just remember this buzzing, and then I fell unconscious. And when I woke up, I had a terrible headache, and my wrists and my ankles were covered with bruises. And I was in a room, and I couldn't recognize any of the people in it until after about 15 minutes, I realized it was my wife and my mother-in-law and another friend. And I had six of these sessions, and slowly, slowly, it took 6 weeks. After the first session, I escaped from the hospital wearing just pajamas and bare feet and trudged over muddy fields to, and was found eventually by the police. I mean, it's an incredible experience, but I was taken back to the hospital, had five more sessions, and after the sixth one, I was discharged, and I have never had a twinge of any ailment since. So I'm a walking example of how in certain circumstances this much maligned and stigmatized treatment can actually work.
We're speaking with Simon Winchester, the author of The Man with the Electrified Brain. Obviously, since that time, as you allude to, electroshock therapy has come into considerable disrepute. What was, at that time, the reputation of that kind of therapy, and what is your opinion of it now, at this point in your life?
Well, I think as most of us, we've all seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We know that it's a sort of last-ditch form of treatment. The very last ditch, of course, is a lobotomy, which Jack Nicholson's character had in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I think back in the 1960s, it was not regarded so much as last-ditch as a mysterious but often effective form of treatment, not something that was the last throw of the dice. And in my case, it evidently did work, and it was much more, I wouldn't say popular, but widely employed then than it is now. And I remember sitting next, I was on an aeroplane about 15 years ago, crossing the Atlantic, and sat next to the director of Mind, which is a British mental health charity. And he asked me, I mean, someone I didn't know, but he said, had I had any brushes in my life or had any relatives, any brushes with mental health? And I decided to tell him about this. I'd never really spoken about it to anybody. And he said, you know, you really should at some stage in your life write about it, because you're in a position to somewhat increase the popularity or the acceptability of a form of treatment which mysteriously does work, and the stigma that attaches to it, I think, he said, this is him speaking, has to be challenged, because for some people, for many people, many conditions, it does actually prove extremely effective. And when I was researching this piece that I've written, I found a very large number of doctors who said it should be promoted, it should be controlled, and it should be done in a humane and compassionate way, but for some mysterious reason, it does work.
How has having these bouts during your youth changed, or even the threat of having them once they stopped, how did that affect the course of your life? What impact did it have on you?
Well, quite a lot, really. I mean, even to this day, I still, I mean, for most of my career has been as a foreign correspondent, and only in the last 15 years have I sort of settled down on a farm and been writing books. But all the years that I spent as a foreign correspondent, I would end up in faraway, unfamiliar places, and the moment I wake up everywhere to this day, I think, has it come back? It never has. But when I'm in a particularly remote part of the world and I, there's nothing in English around me and the hotel room or the room I'm staying in is completely unfamiliar, that adds to the terror when I woke up. Is it coming back? And there'd be maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds when great relief, and I think, my God, no, it hasn't. And when I'm in my own home, it's easy, you know, to forget this terror. But the terror is still with me because I realize, and this has made me extremely sympathetic to anyone suffering from any sort of ill health mentally, that the brain, not merely a complicated and fragile organism, but something that can be tilted off balance tremendously easily. I mean, a lot of people have said to me, you haven't actually been cured. This condition has merely been put in abeyance, and you're very lucky, but it may come back. Well, it hasn't thus far, and every day that it doesn't, I count myself lucky. But the one thing I won't do, and maybe it's a stupid superstition, is that I'll never read Somerset Maugham's Of Human Bondage, because although as a sensible person, I realize there's no causal connection between having read that book and having that first attack. I'll never read it. I've still got the book, and I've still got the bookmark on page 32, but that's as far as I'm going to go.
Probably best to, just for your peace of mind, to keep it locked up somewhere else. But as a memento, perhaps. We're speaking with Simon Winchester, the author of The Man with the Electrified Brain. Obviously, you've written a tremendous amount in your career about dramatic events and certainly individuals, in the case of The Professor and the Madman, about individuals with mental difficulties. What was it like having yourself as the focus of your writing in this case, as opposed to someone outside?
Well, very peculiar, because, I mean, people have often asked me, I'm now nearly 69 years old, and I have had a very interesting life, and I hope I'll continue to have one. And an awful lot of people have said to me, well, why don't you write an autobiography? And I've never really thought about writing about myself in any sort of way. I'm fascinated with other people and other events and other places, but writing about myself, very self-indulgent, if you like, to do that, I actually very much enjoyed it. I think, I hate saying the word closure, but it has, discussing this situation in this piece, not a very long piece, 12,000 words, that Byliner asked me to do. They asked me to do it because they'd heard stories that I had been unwell and they wondered if I'd share them, and I only felt I could because my parents died last year, the parents who had been so skeptical of my having suffered from anything at all. But I find it a very sort of liberating and enjoyable experience. And so the editor at Byliner has said, can I think of any other extraordinary situations that have happened in my life? And actually I can. So maybe this is the beginning of a whole new literary career.
Well, let's hope so. And although I understand and appreciate the attitude of the British stiff upper lip, but to say self-indulgent when such unique experiences are evidenced, I certainly hope that that more will come out in addition to this. So thank you very much for writing this. Thank you very much for telling such a personal story, and I hope that others check this out and see more of it. Again, we've been speaking with Simon Winchester, the author of The Man with the Electrified Brain. It's available as a Kindle single at Amazon, a quick read at Apple's iBookstore, a Nook Snap at BarnesandNoble.com, and a short read at Kobo. It's free to Byliner subscribers at Byliner.com. Simon Winchester, thank you so much for telling this personal and fascinating story. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com and follow us on Twitter at @NowItsTheNews. Until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy train.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems.
Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-319-2629. That's 800-319-2629. 800-319-2629.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The White House says it values the relationship with Mexico, which is under pressure by President Trump to stop the flow of illegal aliens at our southern border. Republican Congressman Doug Collins of Georgia was just down on the U.S.-Mexico border, and he says the Border Patrol agents had a message for him.
We'll do what needs to be done because I care about these people. But they're also, one of the things I also care about is there's superheroes among us right now. They're our Border Patrol agents. They're the folks down there, our agents with ICE and our agents at the ports of entry. They're the superheroes among us right now because they're dealing with a problem. Right. And as one of them looked at me the other day and said, we're doing our job, do yours.
A judge is issuing a stay allowing Missouri's only abortion clinic to remain open for now. Missouri Governor Michael Parson claims the state found numerous violations of state laws and regulations during their annual inspection of a Planned Parenthood in St. Louis and ordered it shut down. This is USA Radio News.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry.
Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere at retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
Residents in areas of Arkansas are fleeing to higher ground after a levee on the Arkansas River was breached on Friday. The National Weather Service says the Dardanelle Levee, located northwest of Little Rock, breached early Friday morning and water was moving swiftly. An American woman says she was brutally attacked at a five-star hotel in the Dominican Republic. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has her story.
The Delaware woman says she left her room to go downstairs to get a snack when she couldn't get room service. Then someone suddenly grabbed her and pulled her into a maintenance room, where she says the man savagely beat and choked her for hours and then left her for dead.
I just remember thinking at that point I wasn't going to make it home to see my boys and my husband, that they weren't going to find me.
She says she was found 8 hours later and then spent 5 days in a hospital. She's back home now, but Dominican Republic authorities have not yet made an arrest. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Warner Media, Netflix, and Disney are all saying they're going to consider halting production in Georgia over the recent fetal heartbeat abortion law that was signed. Johnny Joey Jones lives in Georgia and says Chick-fil-A does a lot for the community. And by the way, for all these film companies that want to leave so quick, it wouldn't be as easy as many of them think.
Dan Cathy, the owner of Chick-fil-A, brought Hollywood to Georgia in a lot of ways. So a lot of people don't know this, and I'm so excited you guys have me on and let me talk about this part of the issue a lot of people don't talk about. Pinewood Studios is in Fayetteville, Georgia, the same town that Chick-fil-A was founded and operates today. And Pinewood Studios is the home of Disney. It's the home of Marvel. The last 10 films, I think, since Ant-Man, have either been filmed in Georgia or at least the reshoots have been done right there at Pinewood Studio in Georgia. The biggest actors, the biggest directors are buying homes across the street at Pinewood Forest, which is a green energy town that Dan Cathy pioneered, and he actually paid for all of it. And what people don't understand, I live in the town Noonan, Georgia, where Alyssa Milano films her Netflix show. It's not the tax cuts. A lot of states have tax cuts. And it's not the unions. Most of the unions still operate in Georgia. They've extended that over to get the workers there to begin with. What really makes Georgia irreplaceable to the film industry is the commitment all these Anytown USA small towns have made to the industry. If they want to film a Noonan, Georgia, people gladly close up shop and let it happen.
Please remember, you can find us on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Good afternoon. This is Larry McAtee, and this is Home Time with Home Team. Home Team Inspection Service, your friendly neighborhood.